You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated...
It is Tuesday, December 6, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Mark Bray of Occupy Wall Street. Today, Occupy Our Homes. Actions taking place in over 20 cities across the nation. All sorts of direct actions. Occupying abandoned homes. Stopping foreclosures. Playing around maybe with a foreclosure auction. All sorts of great actions. Very important stuff, folks. We've been saying for a while, what happens when all those people dealing with their foreclosures and their mortgages and the rampant fraud in that industry become less isolated and see what's happened to them not as a function of one or two bad mistakes they've made in their lives solely, but as a system that is geared to prey on people who may make those mistakes and sometimes make no mistakes. Very important day. We'll be talking to activist Mark Bray about that. Also on the program today, very troubling climate change news over the weekend. I don't really know how to characterize it other than saying extremely troubling. More on the kabuki that is this payroll tax cut, the ridiculousness of it. And a couple of healthcare stories. All that and more. Also, oh, incidentally, and this is a message for parents. The Muppets poisoning your kids' minds. Of course. You know, when puppets and cartoon characters are not turning your kids gay, they're turning them into communists. Let's be honest. In fact, the whole construct of puppets and cartoons, all a liberal plot to poison your children's minds, unless, of course, they're cartoons of Jesus or little Jesus Muppets. Juppets. I don't know. We will get to this interview in just a moment, but I will also say, just teasing a little bit in the better half of the program today. Last night, I attended the RFK Ripple of Hope Awards dinner. As many of you know, I do a weekend radio show with Mike Papantonio and Bobby Kennedy Jr. And I was a guest of Mike Papantonio's. He invited Nikki and I to the awards dinner. And it was, you know, I got to be honest with you, folks. I don't go to a lot of these functions. In fact, I go to none of these functions. And so last night was a bit of a treat, and, you know, we'll get into it, but Al Gore spoke. I actually knew a lot of the people there. It's weird. But I realized, like, most of the people I know at PS 87 at the elementary school that my daughter attends, most of the people I know there are famous. That just happens to be the people that I know there. Because I don't have an opportunity to meet a lot of other parents. I try and make sure that my child is as antisocial as possible and makes no friends. And it just so happens that there's some actors there. And so I saw Richard Kind last night. It was quite fun. We will talk about it more. But now, yes, it will be Name Drop Tuesday. But now we will take a break. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Mark Bray. Later in the program, Jeff Smith will be calling in just 15 minutes shy of when he will be involved in an action. Should be an exciting day. This is a very important day, I think. In fact, I would argue that this could be the most important day for Occupy Wall Street since, essentially, at least in New York, they were evicted from Zuccotti Park. The day or two that happened after that, this is really the new direction. One of the sort of harbingers of what is to come. We'll talk to Mark Bray right when we get back. I won't get out that door, but I've been in town for just now 50 minutes now. Oh, baby, I feel so down, and I don't know why. I keep walking for miles, but see, people, they don't understand. No girlfriends, they can't understand. Your grandsons, they won't understand. On top of this, I ain't ever gonna understand. Last night, she said, oh, baby, don't feel so down. Oh, it's turned me off, but I feel left out. So I turned around. Oh, I'm never gonna be alright. It was a great big lie, 'cause I left that night. We are back, Sam Seder, on the Majority Report. On the phone, Mark Bray. He is a member of the Occupy Wall Street press team, here to talk to us today about Occupy Our Homes. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
Tell me, what is planned for today?
Well, today is the start of a nationwide campaign put on by the Occupy movement in coalition with local community groups. And there's going to be events in about 25 cities around the country. About half of those cities are going to have basically sort of direct actions where either they prevent the foreclosure, move a family back into a foreclosed home, or disrupt a foreclosure auction. And the other maybe 10 or 12 are going to have solidarity events, vigils for foreclosures, and so forth. Here in New York, what we're doing is we have a march starting at 1, where we're going to go by all sorts of foreclosed properties, where we're going to show people, you know, places that would be ripe for occupation. And then we're going to end at a house where the family that was foreclosed upon, that got evicted from their house, is going to be returned to the house. So it's a very exciting day, and it should really show the power that the movement still has.
You know, I really think that this is perhaps one of the most important days of Occupy Wall Street's history, particularly since the eviction from Zuccotti Park, because one of the things that we've been talking about in this program with many Occupy Wall Street activists and housing activists is that time where Occupy Wall Street begins to reach people whose homes have been foreclosed, who have been victims of this massive sort of mortgage scam, whether it was in the derivatives or in the actual servicing and origination of these loans. How how are Occupy movements actually reaching these people?
Right. Well, I think you're exactly right. And I think today marks an important transition from more symbolic actions like big marches and rallies, sort of show how much popular support we have, to actually empowering people to improve their actual day-to-day lives. And so, you know, today, for example, it's a very direct example where someone is actually going to have a place to live that previously didn't have a place to live. You know, and those sorts of things where we stop foreclosures. There's a great example in Cleveland where a woman was set to be foreclosed upon, and she got a 30-day stay because of the presence of occupiers in her front lawn and got to work out a way to renegotiate her financial situation. And moreover, in the long run, I think it'll really make banks think twice about the tactic of foreclosure when they have a dispute with a homeowner. So I think this is a really important step, as you said, and it's going to really show people that, you know, if we work together collectively, we can actually improve things without having to rely on politicians.
How does the actual mechanics of this work? I mean, I've seen there was a great video that that HuffPo actually did documenting a 3 or 4 day attempt to save a foreclosed home in, I think it was in Atlanta or outside of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Where
yeah.
And walk us through like how the mechanics you anticipate when you say that we're going to return a family back to their home. How's that going to work?
Sure. Well, you know, basically, the important thing ultimately comes down to the political dynamics of it, because obviously, if the family's been foreclosed upon and evicted from the house, they don't have the legal right to be there, right? Obviously, so it's an act of civil disobedience. So we have an eviction defense group that's basically prepared, if the police come, to set up a perimeter of bodies around the house, have people inside, and prepared to get arrested in civil disobedience to draw political attention, to draw media attention to the injustice of the foreclosure crisis in general. And so, you know, that's basically the circumstance. The woman that's going to be moved in today has two small children, so everything will be done to basically get them out of the way if it should come down to a confrontation with the police, and contingency plans are made for them to stay with other people if the mother gets evicted, right? So it's a serious business, and we don't take it lightly, and we also have plans in place to help the family not only today but on day 2, day 3, day 4, and make it sustainable, get them heat and hot water, to clean the place up, renovate it. People are bringing gifts today, all sorts of toys for the kids or housing supplies. So, you know, we don't take this lightly, and it's a long-term investment in a family's life.
There's two aspects I want to talk about this. But the first, let me just say, it's like I just think this is just so amazing, and it's so impressive to me that people are willing to do this, put themselves on the line in this way for a family that they may have just met, maybe they've never met. I cannot tell you guys how much admiration I have for what you're doing. But
well, thanks so much, Sam. Yeah.
Let's also talk about, okay, so the idea here is that if I'm Bank of America or I'm whoever holds this mortgage, do I really want a deal with my name and my bank being repeated over and over again in the news reports of these people being arrested and the images of this woman and her two small children and their story out there and maybe the story about how we told her she could have a modification and we told her not to pay and then we decided to foreclose on her because our fees are big. I get that in terms of how that's going to work with that one person. So
sure.
What is the next step in terms of systematically? I mean, is it to just continue to increase awareness and more of these instances until there's enough political pressure to say, we've got to deal with this, not, you know, each bank can't just try and avoid each single action. We may have to deal with this in a broader sense.
Yeah, I think that you're right on. I think the point is that ultimately social change, when it's come about in really sweeping manners in the past, whether it be with the labor movement, the suffrage movement, the civil rights movement, doesn't just happen when a politician says, oh, there's an issue, I'm sitting in my office, I'm going to address it, but when there is this large social unrest to the point where politicians simply can't ignore what's going on. And so certainly we're going to be helping individual families getting into their homes or stay in their homes, and that has great import for them. But as you touched upon, it'll raise the issue to a level of awareness that it previously didn't have, and basically create a social circumstance where it can't be ignored any longer. And so certainly it'll make banks think twice when they go towards foreclosure in the future. Is this really the most cost-effective and in terms of public relations, and why this move to deal with this specific family. And, you know, if I were a family that had that issue, I'd be happy that the banks are going to think twice about foreclosing on me.
Right. I mean, of course, it's more financially profitable for them in the short run. But essentially what you guys are trying to do is make them exact another price that they're going to have to pay. So, I mean, how did you get in touch with this woman, let's say, how are people, are you relying on these individuals to have awareness of the Occupy movement, or is it through organizations that they're dealing with? I mean, how did you get in touch with this woman?
Well, you know, the great thing about this movement is that we're not trying to supersede already existing community groups and organizations that are doing this work. So we got in touch with groups such as New York Communities for Change, Vocal New York, Take Back the Land, that have been doing this sort of work for a long time in these regions of New York, but hadn't got the level of national attention that they are now getting because of the Occupy movement. And so we got in touch with this family through those organizations, stuff that's already happening on the ground. You know, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We're just trying to basically be a platform for these already existing campaigns and organizations to come together and to work. And so since we've been doing this, and since the word has been getting out, and then the website Occupy Our Homes is up there, we've actually gotten several more requests for help with foreclosure-related issues from other families and other people in the New York area. So that's why this is a campaign and not a one-off thing. And I think the more successful we are with this, the more we're going to see more and more requests for assistance coming in.
Are there any stories that you're aware of that have particularly struck you?
Of people that have come to us?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there was one story of a woman whose mother is terminally ill and has mounting medical debts and has a small little house, and she's facing imminent foreclosure. You know, it's those kinds of issues. I remember reading a story even recently that there was, I forgot where it was, but a 103-year-old woman who was going to be foreclosed upon, and even the sheriff wouldn't do it because it just, you know, was like way over the line. And so I think if we can kind of raise those issues of, you know, if we really want a just, rational, democratic society, maybe we could rethink how we deal with people who are having economic troubles, because kicking everyone out of their house isn't even good for the economy in the long run.
Right. You know, there was a story today that Josh Harkinson had in Mother Jones about, oddly enough, organizing for Occupation, which was an organization that started actually in the spring, by a guy named Frank Morales, who's a 64-year-old Episcopal priest and a longtime
squatter. I've met Frank.
And he had a great quote in there where he said, mutual housing, land trust, whatever the hell you want to call it, you're not going to get, in terms of those are policy prescriptions that he hopes ultimately will be made. But he says, you're not going to get in the door until we start taking shit. And that's in some respects what you guys are also doing. You are forcing the politicians to come up with solutions for problems that you are making sure that they won't let get swept under the rug.
Right. And Organizing for Occupation has been working in tandem with us in various cities and are a very similar group. And ultimately, as I said before, you know, if you look at social change, how it happens, it's not just through politicians making decisions. They don't make them in a vacuum. They make them in terms of protest movements, unrest more generally. And there's a long tradition of that in this country, and that's what we're sort of reviving now. And to really make the point that we have a crisis, that we've had approximately 3 million homes foreclosed since the beginning of the housing crisis in 2006, you know, that's a really big problem, not something that can be swept under the rug.
All right. Well, I really appreciate, Mark, your spending the time talking to us. And if there are people who are going to be occupying a foreclosed home and helping with a family in there, and they want to call into this program over the next couple of days as they take part in this action, we would love to hear from them. And
I'll set that up, sure.
Okay, and you can also talk to Jeff Smith, apparently, who you know, and he's got contact information for us as well. But we really appreciate your taking the time, Mark, and good luck today.
Well, thank you so much, Sam. It's been a pleasure.
All right. We got to take a break, folks. When we come back, some more news stories for you. And then, of course, all the juicy stuff in the better half of the program. Still getting over the cold. It's not completely gone, but I think you can tell I'm feeling much better. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Last night there were skinheads on my lawn. Take the skinheads bowling, take them bowling. Take the skinheads bowling, take them bowling. Some people say that bowling alley's got big lanes. Got big lanes, got big lanes. Some people say that bowling alleys all look the same. There's not a line that goes here that rhymes with anything. Had a dream last night, but I forget what it was. We are back. Sam Cedar on the award-winning Majority Report. We'll put up a link to this Josh Harkinson story on the Occupy movement targeting foreclosed properties. 040, that's Organizing for Occupation, which is a 200-member squatting organization. It's just, this stuff is just so inspiring to me. And I can't help but think it's going to be just more and more of this, where you have crews of people who just go in, just are extremely ballsy. This story of this crew that goes in, they're aware of some vacant properties in, you know, a lot of times what happens is landlords, slumlords, they don't want to rent certain properties because they have some type of tax scam, or they're anticipating getting subsidies from the city, or they don't want to have to upkeep certain apartments, or they want to be able to flip them and sell them. And they want to be able to do it vacant, all sorts of reasons. And but there are people who need homes. And so some of these crews are just busted into the locations, trying to repair them and dealing with the consequences and putting a family in there. And this was very big in this city back in the 70s. And in fact, even in, I think, in the 80s, if you went down to, they don't even refer to it anymore as Alphabet City. Do we refer to it as Alphabet City in this? Have you even heard that term?
Yeah, but that's because I am a fan of the band Leftover Crack, and they constantly refer to that area as Alphabet City.
That's almost like we just did a comedy bit there. I can't even understand. Yeah, I'm sure Leftover Crack sings quite a bit about Alphabet City. But Alphabet City used to be Avenue A, B, and C, and I guess D even, right? Down in the Lower East Side or in the East Village. Nobody refers to it that way, but that was, it was sort of the Wild West there, not even that long ago, 20 years ago. And
there was a big squat in that area. It's called like C-Squat or something like that.
Yeah, well, yeah, all around Thompson Square Park, there was all sorts of squatting that was happening, and that's even west of there. And when I did, back in the heyday of my earning potential, and I had sitcom money, I bought an apartment in New York City. This is 15 years ago, I guess. And I was renovating it, but I didn't want to tell the co-op board. And so through Broccoli, I knew some guys who knew some guys. And I had a squatter plumber do the plumbing in my kitchen. And instead of actually running another pipe, he just ran the plumbing off of some pipes somewhere else. And I got caught by the co-op board. It was pretty uncomfortable, but I had, I got tipped off that they were coming to survey the place, so I had the whole place drywalled up, and they came in, they couldn't figure out what happened. It just looked like I had just taken out the appliances and repainted the drywall, so they were pretty pissed off. But it's just amazing to see this happening on behalf of people who are just in desperate times. Meanwhile, speaking of desperate times, And Al Gore, of course, was pounding this drum last night when I saw him speak. But Bill McKibben writes yesterday, the most important piece of news yesterday, speaking of Sunday, this week, this month, and this year, was a new set of statistics released by the Global Carbon Project. And it was a piece that was published in the Nature Climate Change Journal. It tracked carbon emissions over the past few years and found that emissions from burning fossil fuels jumped by a record 5.9% in just 1 year, from 2009 to 2010. So the slowing down, and of course this is a member, Heathen Stephen, will appreciate this story because he's been writing me in the after show, the better half of the program. How is economic growth in any way compatible with the reality that we're going to have to slow economic growth in some fashion to deal with carbon, with the carbon that we'll be blowing into the atmosphere? So emissions jumped by 5.9% in 2010, hitting 10 billion tons last year. He said it was, in fact, the arguably, this is Bill McKibben again, among the most important pieces of data in the last, three centuries, since, according to the New York Times, it represented almost certainly the largest absolute jump in any year since the Industrial Revolution. And in other climate change news, a second study published in the journal Nature Geoscience, well, of course, then how can you possibly believe that? It has the word science in it. Estimates that 3/4 of the warming that's been experienced since 1950 can be traced to human activities. As we speak, governments are meeting in Durban for a UN summit in South Africa dealing with carbon emissions. But, of course, nothing's going to get done. Global CO2 emissions since 2000 are tracking at the high end of the projections used by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which far exceed 2 degrees warming by 2100. Okay, in other words, the IPCC, which consists of literally thousands of scientists around the world, said that we were on track about 10 years ago for a 2 degrees Celsius increase in the temperature, essentially, of the globe, the aggregate temperature of the globe, by 2100, which would have devastating effects on our climate and necessarily devastating effects on our societies that range from droughts, massive food shortages, destruction of lands as they go underwater, major migrations of populations, subsequent wars, in addition to increase in natural catastrophes. Al Gore last night, and you know what, I meant to clip some of this because Nikki surreptitiously recorded some of it. I don't know if that was appropriate, and I wasn't aware she was doing it, for the record. But he said, Al Gore had a great line. He said, you know, the situation we're in now is if you had a heart problem and you went in to see 100 doctors, and 98 of these specialists said, oh my God, you need surgery immediately. You have a serious malfunction in your heart. that could kill you or debilitate you at any moment. And 98 of them said you need to do this. And two of them were saying, we need to look at this a little bit more. He said, that's the situation we're in right now. But if we know now that global CO2 emissions are at the high end of the projections, of course, you know, when anybody makes any type of projections, whether it's in, business, I guess, I didn't do this, but I'm not very good at business. But if you make projections, if you are the Social Security Trust Fund actuaries, the projections that we get that say that Social Security is the trust fund's going to run out in 2037, that tends to be – that's the middle projection. There's an A, B, and C projection. A, for instance, might be one which has a projected growth of the economy at a certain level. B, it would be less. C, it would be even less. So you have a range of projections based on inputs into your models. And the IPCC had a range of projections. And their mid-projections called for, suggested that we would see a 2 degrees Celsius increase of warming by 2100. And 10 years out, we're at the high end of those projections. So it's happening faster. Since 1990, which is the base year for the Kyoto Protocol, carbon emissions from fossil fuels, this is according to Time Magazine, have increased, or Time blog, have increased by 49%. The treaty's ambition was to cut emissions by at least 5%. So Kyoto, which is set to expire next year, has been a complete failure. And I know that the morons in the Republican Party will not mention what's going on in Durban. I don't know if President Obama has already or if he intends to. But we got a real problem. We got a real problem. And, you know, one thing that Vice President Gore also mentioned last night was a speech that RFK gave, I guess, at Durban, or maybe on the road to Durban, one of the speeches. And I think it was the specifically the Ripple of Hope speech. And he said there were four points. There were four obstacles to change. And the most difficult obstacle was the notion of futility. The idea that you can entertain the idea that what you're doing is futile. And that's a very important thing to keep in mind when talking about these things. 'Cause the notion of futility is our worst enemy in this situation. So something needs to be done. I'm not sure where it comes from, but, you know, fortunately there are people who are pressing and continue to press harder. And I would just say also, I'll talk more about this in the after show, but when you hear these speeches from RFK, it's just unbelievable. So far and beyond what we hear from politicians today, it's almost as if from a different planet. Meanwhile, this is an update from a couple of days ago, but the activists in Wisconsin had 60 days, 60 days in which to get 540,000 required signatures to trigger a recall election. I guess it started on the I'm not sure exactly when it started, but probably, I think December. Is it possible December 1st? No. That can't possibly be, because they've already collected over 300,000 signatures. Wow. 300,000 signatures in a Columbia County. This is in Wisconsin. It's a Republican county. George Bush narrowly won in 2004. Within a couple of days, it seems, the organizers exceeded 100% of their goal for the entire petition drive. There were 50,000 signatures gathered in the first 2 days, 105,000 in the first four. After 12 days of grassroots activists, this is after 12 days, they got 300,000. They're still pulling in 25,000 signatures every day. They're aiming to turn in signatures on January 13th. I think they're going to have significantly more. Meanwhile, this is from 2 weeks ago now, but the Wisconsin Gazette reported that a commissioner on the board that makes final decisions in cases involving workplace discrimination, one of the Walker appointees, said Wisconsin law does not prohibit anti-gay harassment on the job. Lori McCallum, recently appointed by Governor Scott Walker to a 6-year term on the state's Labor and Industry Review Commission, wrote that the Wisconsin Fair Employment Act applies only to sexual harassment. And that contention was the basis for her dissenting opinion in a case involving a Milwaukeean, a machine operator who was subjected to years of anti-gay harassment as an employee of Stroh Precision Die Casting. She defied 30 years of precedent in state law by asserting that sexual preference, as she put it, is not a protected category in workplace discrimination. Apparently, they just relentlessly harass this guy, calling him a fag, referring to him as my little bitch, putting a bullseye hunting target over the word gay, stuck it on his toolbox, put a sign queer or queen on his locker, on and on and on and on. Just stunning. I can't wait for that guy to lose his job. He'll enjoy his job working for the Koch brothers, but I hope they don't provide him any workplace security or protections. All right, folks, we're going to take a break and head into the better half of the program. In the better half of the program today, we will hear from Jeff Smith, who will be getting ready to involve in a parade of foreclosed homes. Great piece by Matthew Iglesias on the ridiculousness of this payroll tax holiday debate, another debate. It echoes what I said on Radigan's show yesterday. Also, I will explain to you why, if your children are watching the Muppets, if you're watching, you're allowing your children to watch the Muppets, you're probably turning them into commies. Maybe gay, but definitely into commies. Also, more on why rich people are not job creators. And two very interesting pieces on healthcare. All that and more in the better half of the program. If you are not listening to the better half of the program, it's really, you have only yourself to blame. Because it also means that you're not supporting this program. Now, if you can't afford to, email me. And we'll work something out. But if you can't afford to, and you look at your monthly bills and you're paying $10 for you send it a month. How much are you using that? Just get box. What is that? What is that box? What is that thing?
Oh, Dropbox?
Yeah, get Dropbox. It's free. Okay? Or are you paying Showtime? How often do you watch that? Twice a year? 3 hours? Just BitTorrent it. Save yourself $5 and become a member of Majority Report. There's many other ways. We need your support, folks. We need more members. I don't know how to put that in any other terms. But I will, if you want, if you become a member now and email me, I will learn to say it in Spanish. Give us a review on iTunes. Buy your coffee at justcoffee.coop. Coffee, tea, chocolate, fair trade. 10% discount, the coupon code MAJORITY. If you're buying crap through Amazon, buy it through our link. And stick around, folks. Tomorrow we may have a new website. Don't forget, we also have merch. See you in the better half of the program.